Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Summer is all about the freedom to have fun. Forget a vacation and take a tequila-cation with new Truly Tequila Soda. This refreshing blend of real fruit juice from concentrate, sparkling water, and premium tequila blanco is the drink of the summer. Try all four refreshing flavors, all with 5% ABV and just 100 calories. Truly Tequila Soda. Keep it light. Hard Seltzer Beverage Company, Boston, Massachusetts. Please drink responsibly.
All right, here we go. Ready?
Yes, Staff Sergeant.
Friday episode, energy, high, feeling moves. Okay.
Well, welcome back to another edition of Zero Block 30. My friends, it's a Friday edition. I've got with me my entire squad. I've got young PFC Bren, who's going by Lib now. I've got Kate Filet Mignon. Her dad hates when I say Kate Filet Mignon. And we've got Captain Cons. Today we are going to have five rounds in the magazine. Round number one, were airmen denied hot meals, indoor toilets, and other luxuries as they prepare for the fog of war?
What?
An article floating around the internet says yes, and the Marine Corps and Army are collectively vomiting and rolling our eyes at it. Round number two, General Mattis dropped an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal. I haven't read it yet, but I'd imagine it's all about the benefits of the Thrift Savings Plan and the benefits of using a high-quality credit union like the good folks at Fort Sill National Bank. Round number three, the Marine Corps is fucking lit. Find out how the main color sergeant of the entire United States Marine Corps used an element of fire to discipline his unit because they were nasty little worms. Round number four, we interviewed Stephen Machuga of StackUp.org. It's an organization that brings gaming and active duty troops. I knew it was going to be fucked up there.
Of StackUp.org.
You spelled
God damn
dot.
You, Kate.
You can start at round four. You don't have to redo all of them.
I am aware. Round number four, we interviewed Stephen Machuga of StackUp.org. Nope, I'm taking that fucking dot out. Round number four, we interviewed Stephen Machuga of StackUp.org, an organization.
No, I'm taking that out. Proceeds to read it exactly how we had it written.
Well, I just didn't want to read dot.
Yeah.
I'm not saying any of that shit that Kate wrote. She wrote a word salad.
Fuck you. Fuck you.
Here we go. Round number four, we interviewed Stephen Machuga of StackUp.org, and things get nerdy in the best poppable way. Poopy balls, duty
balls. Best poppable way.
Round number four, we interviewed Stephen Machuga of StackUp.org. Things get nerdy in the best possible way when he talks about his gaming organization. Round number five, just when you thought challenge coordinates couldn't get any worse, an Army major has sparked controversy across the interwebs by using one to endorse Joe Biden while she was wearing her lovely Army Utilities. And all of that is presented by our good friends at Starbucks. Over the last couple weeks, we've been having a segment called Boots on the Ground, where we've talked about all the different things that Starbucks is doing for the military community and their family. Just as a recap, they've hired 25,000 military veterans and their spouses, and they aren't stopping there. They'll be hiring 5,000 vets and military spouses every single year moving forward with no intention on stopping. They offer reservists and National Guard employees unique benefits like 80 hours of military service pay per year. Military family stores are located near military installations all across the United States, and they've opened up 61 as of like in a week. They'll have 61 with a plan on doubling that number moving forward. They've given 3 million cups of coffee to deployed troops all across the globe, and they've adopted over 1,000 different units through their adopted unit program. They've worked closely with VSOs, which is Veteran Service Organizations, and Military Service Organizations to make an impact of over 440,000 military communities, members of the military community that they've touched. They're doing great things all across the globe. And it really does, just speaking from like my own perspective, seeing some of the comments that pop up on our Instagram or our Twitter whenever we talk about Starbucks, it's like, oh, they're not actually doing that. Shut up. They are.
Yeah, how many
like,
times,
they really
how many times
legitimately are.
that they're doing these things before you realize, okay, maybe they're actually doing these things.
Well, I just really genuinely, seeing how genuine they are just from working with them, and right. that the people who run their military branch of like reaching out to them, they're all military too. They've been there, right. they've served, so they get it and they understand how important it is. And also the Starbucks military community, that Facebook group that they have, Starbucks military mm-hmm. community, anybody can join it. It's like the most positive, good vibes Facebook right? page. And it's like if you're a working parent and you don't know how to find time, like I saw a post where it's like, my husband's deploying, I've got three kids, how am I supposed to? And people just are like, oh, sure, we'll help you do that. Starbucks can help you do that if you want to work there, whatever. It's just so like, I don't know, it's just the good vibes, man, the whole thing.
Yeah.
It is. So if you're getting out and transitioning, or if you have a spouse who is like constantly worried about where they can work at and changing jobs whenever you get stationed, tell them that they can work at Starbucks. Like, it's a great place to be. They're doing great things, and it's legitimate. It's not fucking just blowing smoke up your ass. They're actually doing great things. Very happy with both Kate and young Bren, who went to the party yesterday. Barstool had a happy hour party where they basically paid for everybody's drinks and a little social gathering. Everybody's here on time, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. Well done.
Well, I mean, come on. It's 11:30. It's not 8 a.m. I mean, let's not give them too much credit.
Yeah,
it's early. It's early Barstool life.
It's early for Barstool life, and early for me, if you know that I was at an open bar. If you've ever seen me in an open bar scenario, mm-hmm. it's like the old lady that has to shove all the rolls in her bag. It's like, I better shove all these drinks down my gullet. So,
not to mention we're regularly late when there aren't happy hours right. the night before.
Yes. So this is a big accomplishment. I will say, I'm going on day 6 now of no smoking.
I was worried about last night.
Well, so was I, because the hardest thing about quitting smoking is excessive drinking, that combo that I seem to do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I have a confession to make.
What is it?
I had one, just one though, American Spirit that I bummed off the Call Her Daddy producer.
So then that doesn't count.
It doesn't count, right?
And no, I'm saying...
No, I don't think that counts.
Well, no. I shouldn't have said doesn't count. I'm saying your streak is broken.
Streak is definitely broken.
That counts.
No.
Yes. 100% broken.
Well, no. Come on. We have a standard here on this show. And the standard is excellence.
Bring it on. We do not have that standard at all. If you listen to a show, we constantly fuck up. I think if you are a consistent smoker and you only have one smoke at a night of drinking, that is an enormous win.
Thank you.
I'm not saying it's not a win.
If I would have accepted anything if she would have done 3 or less. Doing just one... Well done, Kate.
Thank you. I'm
as a matter
all right,
of fact,
why I'm holding you to a higher
As a matter
standard.
Of fact, should we give Kate... I might do it. Letter of appreciation to Kate Mannion.
I was hoping it was a NAM.
Participation trophy picture has now invaded 0 block 30.
NAM, my God.
Yikes. Yeah. Jeez.
And I made sure it was an American spirit the spirit of America.
I'm proud that you took it down from 15-20 down to 1. I think that is... an accomplishment.
Feels a little shady.
But if Cal Ripken had sat in the dugout and not played, his streak would have been broken, right?
Correct.
So you're back at 1.
Wow.
You're back at 1. Listen, I'm sorry. I'm going to hold you to a different standard. I expect
more
out of you.
No, I think it's the other way around. There was plenty of games where Cal Ripken only came out and played like 1 or 2 innings.
That's right.
I think that counts.
That's not true.
I only took the cigarette at first base. I only just did a little nibble on it.
People, let us know what you think. Is Kate's no-cig streak still intact, or is she starting back
at
0?
No, don't let us know. Don't be a negative, Nancy. Let's bring her up.
I'm bringing her up. I'm proud that it went down from 20 down to 1.
Two different leadership styles here. You see how the officer handled it and how the lovely staff sergeant handled it. Thank you all.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
All right. Well,
we're going to get into that in round 2 with Mattis, because he dropped an amazing letter that there are certain parts where I was like, okay, this is getting a little fluffy. But when he talks about leadership, I would listen. I would pay to go to a Mattis leadership conference and actually sit and just watch PowerPoints of him talking about his style. I absolutely love it. We'll get more into that in round number 2. Let's get going with the actual show, because our beloved friends in the Air Force, my friends, they are going through the shit. Let's kick off round 1 right now. Round 1. Now, the way that we preface this, you might think that it's bad news. And I don't want our beloved listener to think this is all bad. So listen closer to the introduction, because I am proud of the Air Force for doing this type of training. Kate, do you want to read what they're actually doing?
Sure. Should I read first? It's from Defense News. And the headline makes you think something terrible's going on, and then you decide for yourselves. But here's the headline. Denied hot meals and indoor toilets, U.S. airmen prepare for the fog of war. And you're like, whoa, people denied them hot meals and indoor toilets? Oh, my God. A U.S. Air Force F-15 Strike Eagle prepares to touch down at an airbase in Poland when a bird strike takes out one of the fighter's two engines, forcing an emergency landing. It's all chaos. Meanwhile, on the ramp, another F-15 pilot sees a warning light turn on, halting plans to take off until further notice. Both jets were supposed to be on the ground in Poland for a short amount of time, enough to get refueled before taking off again. But a broken jet's a real problem for the Air Force personnel, and they respond by immediately going into crisis mode.
Crisis mode.
Crisis mode.
Dun, dun, dun.
We're in crisis mode. We got birds hitting our planes. Our pets' heads are falling off. Anyways, it's a perfect test for Operation Rapid Forge, a U.S. Air Force exercise held in Europe this July that was meant to test the service's readiness to rapidly deploy, and in some cases, to live in the Spartan conditions airmen could face in battle with an adversary like Russia or China.
So, I love it that they're doing actual drills.
They're training.
Beautiful. They're doing real-life training. This is what you're supposed to be doing as one of the branches of the military. I love it.
Yeah, and so far you're reading it and you're thinking of the headline, denied hot meals and indoor toilets, U.S. Airmen prepare for it. So I'm like, okay, well, where's that going to come in? It seems like they've been wronged somehow. The exercise involved various aircraft and fighter wings from Air Force bases across the country in Germany. Over a two-week period, only 2 weeks, those aircraft trained over Europe and made brief stops in Poland, as well as Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia, for refueling and rearming by Air Force personnel under strict time constraints.
Now, I know it says only 2 weeks, but 2 weeks training op in the field, that's a pretty lengthy stay in the field.
It is. That's a long time to be out in the field, for sure.
Like, whenever you're doing training, sure, it's not going out to, like, Cobra Gold or anything like that, but it is, that's a long time, because normally a field op will be, I mean, 4 or 5 days? Like, you don't go out for two-week periods
that often. 2 weeks can feel like a month sometimes.
And speaking of long time, Colonel Don Yates, the commander of the 4th Fighter Wing, admitted to reporters that these are things the mainstream U.S. Air Force has not done in a long time. So these 4th Fighter Wing airmen deployed to Germany, they lived and worked out of tents. Some were trained as multifunctional airmen. They took on multiple jobs in these different countries, like driving and refueling trucks, pumping JP-8 fuel, being fuel bubbas, and all these specialized tasks, including loading weapons or perming maintenance. But they were all cut off from running water, hot meals, and indoor toilets.
I love it. That's real life field life. You don't need to have indoor toilets all the time.
Like, is that news? I felt like that was what we all did in the field.
For the Air Force, it's news.
Right.
I want them to take away the porta potty, though. Like, live on wag bags for a while.
Oh, yeah.
I want
Drag your own shit around.
I want you hugging a tree and squatting to drop a number two.
This line, though, by that Commander Yates, the more it sucks out here and you're eating MREs and you're pooping out in the porta john, the higher morale is, Yates said.
That's not true.
You're full of... porta potty's not the only thing full of shit here, people. Okay. We had people out in Poland sleeping in hammocks and stuff. Not because we had to, but because I wanted them to feel what it was like to live in the field.
A hammock?
Oh, my God.
A hammock? Are you kidding me?
And to feel that they're really, really making progress to defend the nation. I love that this is Air Force news. That 2 weeks in the field doing stuff that everybody else does. What was news.
Sitting in his hammock sipping on a lemonade?
I'm not detracting from the Air Force. And I know the Air Force has their own different ops and stuff. And he's saying for the Air Force at large, this is rare. Yeah. But I mean, come on. My God.
You just have to have a little bit of awareness, man. Like, just have a little bit of awareness whenever you're talking about, because you're shitting in a porta potty, that's why you feel like you're defending the nation.
Yeah.
Because you took a dump in a porta potty. It's not something that flushes down.
Right.
Do you guys follow Effin' Boot on Twitter?
Yes.
Yeah.
One of the more aggressive porta potty shits I've ever seen happen on his timeline this week.
Oh, I'm sure.
I missed it.
Somebody just went and sprayed their target was wide right in the porta potty.
Didn't
even go into the bucket. Didn't even hit the blue water. It was just a turd sitting on the side. You walk in there and you're already getting to the point where you know you have to shit in a porta potty. That's a brutal, like, self-realization.
Oh, brutal.
I mean, that's all we had in the field when everybody else is doing it. But if you have to go with, like, a group of pals, say you're at, like, a game, a tailgate,
and
it hits you where you got to take a dump, you're just like, fuck.
My favorite was, first of all, the wag bags. they only had so much plywood, so they would cover the upper half of your body where you're taking a shit, but you could legit see the wag bag hanging down.
Oh, no.
And you could see, so like people could actually see me shitting in a plastic bag and knowing it just killed your soul.
And just watching it plop down into the bag. Oh, God.
And sometimes the guys would come up behind it, and not, they never did it to me, but they could see their buddy taking a shit, so they put their hand underneath the bag and then push it up.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, that's rough.
That's good, clean fun.
Indeed. It truly is. Well, hopefully some of those airmen got a little duty on their butt.
They
got,
you know what, though? The hot meals part really irks me, because lest we forget, I ate oatmeal made with my own urine. So
you
I don't want to hear anything about hot meals. Enough of you, Air Force.
Also, if you're a country, because a lot of this training was to prepare, because, you know, it's Russia, China, we're kind of posturing a little bit, training, whatever. If I'm like a Russian admiral or something and I'm reading this, I'm like, what? The 2 weeks in the field, it's tough for the Russian?
Well,
Russians are also southern. South. Yeah.
I also don't think it's just like other people looking at it, because I guarantee you there's staff sergeants in the Air Force, they're E5s, they're tech sergeants, there's master sergeants, they're E7s. That are reading this like, God damn it, Colonel, just shut your fucking
mouth.
Shut up,
yeah.
Like, that's why you hate when a colonel gets in front of a microphone and they talk about a field op. You're just like, dude, you have zero idea what we're actually doing. Because this colonel is locked away in his own tent doing his own damn thing. And everybody reading this, I'm sure every single enlisted person, junior officer on this is just like, oh, God damn it, we're going to get roasted.
They loved it. They slept in hammocks.
They've come so far. Like, the Air Force does do a lot more than they used to do, like, as far as actual combatives. Every single person that goes through Air Force boot camp now takes a combative course. Is it the same level as some of the other branches? No, but they are making huge strides in what they're doing and being an actual force and lethality, as like the DOD phrase goes. So I wanted to stick up for them for a minute, because I bet every one of them hates this fucking colonel.
I agree. And, you know, in their defense, too, they just do – this is going to sound – they do different things than us, right? Like, as a pilot, you need 8 hours of sleep. All right, if you want good quality 8 hours of sleep, well, you need to be put up somewhere that you're going to get good quality sleep. So I understand that, while the Air Force is always going to be a little bit different. But to your point, Chaps, they are making an effort to go in a different direction.
And
this wasn't really pilots. I mean, there's a couple – but like this was like their regular average Joe Schmoes. But
everybody does that too. Like, it's just like everything is always grouped in as the Air Force. Nobody does anything in the Air Force. You just assume they're pilots. But Kate would be the first one to say, if she said, I was an MP in the Marines, what's the first way that you describe that you were an MP?
But not the asshole kind.
Not the asshole kind.
I wasn't,
or not
the cop kind.
Like, not the writing tickets kind. You were a field MP.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And you put these qualifiers. I'm sure everybody's like, wait. We actually don't think this. We don't think that just because we're shitting in porta potties that this is the first time we're defending the nation.
Right.
That is not what we think at all.
Yeah.
Colonels, man. They'll fucking get you.
We were just goofing out there for 2 weeks. We were rolling around in our hammocks and having a good old
time.
They
look goddamn adorable out there, I tell you.
I went up to them. I said, boop, right on their nose. I'm going to give you one more chance. Do your best Russian accent.
Hi, it's me, Russia.
That's my guy.
Hi.
Yeah.
Hey, that man.
All right, let's move into round number two. All right, so probably the biggest news of the week in the military community is that General Mattis released his op-ed in the Wall Street Journal, and it's every bit as amazing as you think it would be. He doesn't really go after President Trump, which a lot of people expected him to do. He doesn't even really mention the president too often. He talks about his philosophies of leadership. He talks about his life as a Marine, and it's really a condensed version of the book that's going to be coming out soon that he's releasing. So we wanted to bring in somebody, because it is kind of lengthy, we wanted to bring in somebody who would break up the monotony of our voices. So whenever you think of Barstool personalities and who probably sounds most like legendary Jim Mattis, none other than Marty Mush is joining us. Marty, if you'll take it from the top, from General Mattis's words, here we go.
During the interview, Mr. Trump had asked me if I could do the job. I said I could. I'd never aspired to be Secretary of Defense and took the opportunity to suggest several other candidates I thought highly capable. Still having been raised by the greatest generation by two parents who have served in World War II, and subsequently shaped by more than four decades in the Marine Corps, I considered government service to be both honor and duty. when the president asks you to do something, you don't play Hamlet on the wall, wringing your hands to quote a great American company slogan. You just do it. So long as you are prepared, you say yes. When it comes, is this the
moment? You want to keep reading?
Yeah, keep going.
All right.
When it comes to the defense of our experiment in democracy and our way of life, ideology,
Nailed it.
Should have nothing to do with it. Whether asked to serve by a Democratic or Republican, you serve. Quotations. Politics end at the water's edge. That ethos has shaped and defined me, and I wasn't going to betray it. No matter how much I was enjoying my life west of the Rockies, spending time with family I had neglected during my 40-plus years in the Marines.
Marty.
Oh, thank
mush,
you so much, Marty.
Mush.
That was that
appreciate it, Marty.
That was smart.
That was very smart
that
stuff.
That was smart.
Yep.
What do you think he was saying there?
Kate, what is wrong with you? I barely could even fucking understand the words. That took me so hard to do.
Yeah.
Well, you did a great job.
You did
tell
do
you.
A great
yeah,
job.
Yeah, you did excellent, Marty.
I'm
thank
so
you
excited
so much.
To be on this.
Yeah, thank you for joining. He's got the camo shorts on. Ladies and gentlemen, Marty.
Please
Marty.
Thank
Marty.
You, Marty. Thank you, Marty. Thank you.
That was
thank
unbelievable.
You.
Marty Mattis. Marty Mattis.
Marty Mattis.
There we go.
All right. So
Marty brings me back to being
that might have been a better
now.
Idea in my head. I'll take it from there because there is some points that I want to make, and Marty was just about to come on though, so that was a good spot for him to leave. So Mattis picks it up and he says, "My career in the Marines brought me to the moment and prepared me to say yes to a job of that magnitude. The Marines teach you above all how to adapt, improvise, and overcome. But they expect that you have done your homework to have mastered your profession. Amateur performance is anathema," which is, what does that mean, Cons?
I lost where you
yeah,
were.
Yeah, zero
I
idea.
I was moving something.
So many words.
Stuff in the studio.
Anathema means against a normal thesis.
Right. So that means it's against who we are. So
yes.
Amateur performance is against what Marines are. The Marines are bluntly critical of falling short, satisfied only with 100% effort and commitment. Yet over the course of my career, every time I made a mistake, and I made many, the Marines promoted me. They recognized that these mistakes were part of my tuition and a necessary bridge to learning how to do things right. Year in and year out, the Marines had trained me in skills that they knew I needed while educating me to deal with the unexpected.
I just want to stop it there for a second, though.
Okay.
All those mistakes, he's like, I made a lot of mistakes and I kept, you know, they still promoted me. I feel like normally for normies, it doesn't work that way at all. You get like destroyed for any little mistake.
Well,
you made.
I'd imagine maybe some of the mistakes he's referring to were not that
right.
catastrophic.
Yeah.
And they were just maybe leadership miscues.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think there's a difference between making like a judgment call that probably might have ended up wrong and getting like a DUI.
I was thinking like how many times he lost his cat card 3 times and they still right. promoted him.
Yeah.
Anyways, that's
so
beside
he
the
goes
point.
On to say, beneath its Prussian exterior of short haircuts, crisp uniforms, and exacting standards, the Marine Corps nurtured some of the strangest mavericks and most original thinkers I encountered in my journey throughout multiple commands and dozen countries. I want to talk about that for a moment because I think that's true. I think that's true of military life in general. Think about some of the problem solvers that you guys met during your terms in serving.
Oh.
Like people who are giving little equipment a very difficult task and having to get it done with the shittiest stuff that you could possibly imagine.
Mental MacGyvers all around. And I feel like people, I'm so sick of it. The crown eaters. Actually, because I think Marines and all branches, if you're given a task, there's no like, well, we can't do it. It's like, that's not even a thought in your head. It's like, well, we have to do it somehow. That's it. That's the bottom line. So they
even to
out
your
a way.
Own personal so, detriment, because
right.
after we talked about like the incinerators that are sent instead of the mm-hmm. burn pits, some people actually reached out who designed those and who had used some of those in Iraq and Afghanistan. You're only allowed in those to do like four or five pounds of trash at a time. Is how those incinerators work. So small
that's
in order
nothing.
To keep it the flames. You just cannot do that.
Right.
So they just said, fuck it. We're going to figure out a way to do it. We're going to do it caveman style, and we're going to blow it up. I think that when you spend 40 years in the Marine Corps, like General Mattis did, or in the military in general, you're going to walk away with such a breadth of leadership experience, not just from yourself, but by seeing and experiencing so many different kinds of leaders. we're going to go into another point where he talks about how much time he spent in NATO forces and why that shaped him as well and some of the leadership standards that he did. But I think that he focused on the first part on his op-ed on who he is as a Marine and what the Marine Corps gave him. It gave him ability to solve problems. That's why he could look at a role as large and as grandiose as the Secretary of Defense and walk away and say, yes, this is a job that I can do, not because I'm great, but because of the experiences that I've have been great. So, Cons, yeah. You want to read the second portion of the op-ed?
Yes, sure. When I served as Supreme Allied Commander Transformation, a new post created in 2002 to help streamline and reform NATO's command structure, I served with a brilliant admiral from a European nation. He looked and acted every inch the forceful leader. Too forceful. He yelled, dressing officers down in front of others, and publicly mocked reports that he considered shallow instead of clarifying what he wanted. He was harsh and inconsiderate, and his subordinates were fearful. I called in the admiral and carefully explained why I disapproved of his leadership. Quote, your staff resents you, I said. You're disappointed in their input. Okay, but your criticism makes that input worse, not better. You're going the wrong way. You cannot allow your passion for excellence to destroy your compassion for them as human beings.
I want to stop there because
that's a great line.
That's yeah. a fucking great line. Like if you are a young leader listening and you, I know so many reach out and say, hey, I listen at my desk at work, a lot of my troops, I want to highlight that. You cannot allow your passion for excellence to destroy your compassion for them as human beings. What a great line in leadership.
And I think that's one of the things that made Mattis a cult hero among Marines was that he was this big, tough general, but he also didn't hide these moments where he connected with the lower enlisted and showed his human side too.
Mm-hmm. This was a point I had always driven home to my subordinates. Change your leadership style, I continued. Coach and encourage. Don't berate, least of all in public. But he soon reverted to demeaning his subordinates. I shouldn't have been surprised. When for decades you have been rewarded and promoted, it's difficult to break the habits you've acquired, regardless of how they may have worked in another setting. Finally, I told him to go home.
And this immediately reminds me of the chief petty officer of the Navy who had to be taken down. Because a young chief, like if you're just an E7 chief, you're berating people and you have like a yelling and more aggressive. People eat that shit up at the battalion and squadron level. Like they love that type of enlisted leader. Once you get to be an E9 with like headquarters level shit, you can't mm-hmm. do that anymore. You've got to change and adapt to the situation that you're in. And it sounds like this particular gentleman failed in regard.
There's a time and a place for everything and every type of leadership style. And that's just certainly not the way to do it. The loudest and jerkiest leader is usually not the best.
Also, I wish I had been, because I'm sure he didn't politely say, please go home. Yeah. I would like to be a fly on the wall for what.
Well, you know,
I'm sure,
you
know,
I bet he did. Yeah. Because what I think that's that was one of the things that marked me about Chesty Puller's style of leadership too. He wasn't a yeller, because once he got to lieutenant general anyway, he wasn't a yeller. Because you don't need to be. Whenever you're sitting there with three stars and you're in charge, you don't have to. And I think that that's what his point is. Like, to be an effectual leader, you don't have to do that.
I still like to think he said, little bitch, like under his breath a little bit as the guy was walking away.
You can, what is it, Kristen Wiig? You can get out.
Yeah, I think it was
you
like
just
that.
Get out. Yeah. You just take your Russian ass and you get out.
Oh, yeah. That's
I just want to go back to the line about, you know, you can't allow your passion for excellence to destroy your compassion for them as human beings. I think especially, you know, once you get to become an NCO or as an officer and you want to progress in your career, if you know the military is for you and you want to make it a 20-plus year career, if you have that compassion for others, a byproduct of that is that you are going to be excellent because your soldiers, your Marines, your airmen, your sailors, they're going to want to work for you and they're going to give you their best.
Yeah.
So you don't have to worry about that excellence. Because it's just going to come as a product of being a good leader. And you be a good leader by showing that human compassion.
You're absolutely right. Mattis does not reach cult status like he is in the Marine Corps and really across the DOD if there's stories that leak out about him being a dickhead to a young E5.
Boy, it I just love that guy. Happen. He was just People such a dick, that. You know? I just love the way he treated everybody like shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Big Nobody respect. Would like that. So he finally gets to the point of what he's saying. Not finally gets to the point, but lastly, he makes some remarks about what all these lessons sum up and where he thinks that we should be going as a country. Kate, you want to walk us down that path?
Sure. He said, unlike in the past where we were unified and drew in allies, currently our own commons seem to be breaking apart. What concerns me most as a military man is not our external adversaries, it is our internal divisiveness. We are dividing into hostile tribes, cheering against each other, fueled by emotion and a mutual disdain that jeopardizes our future instead of rediscovering our common ground and finding solutions. All Americans need to recognize that our democracy is an experiment and one that can be reversed. We all know that we're better than our current politics. Tribalism must not be allowed to destroy our experiment.
That's powerful.
Yeah.
Wisdom.
Yes. Yep. And it's so true. I mean, all you need to do is turn on the television or go on Twitter, and it's all about the dunking on you culture. As opposed to coming together, having a discussion, coming to solutions, it's let me tell you why you're wrong. And that's obviously not working, because I think more so than any other time in my 34 years, we are more divided as a country than we've ever been.
Yeah.
Whether you're right or left, and it just, it really is upsetting.
Indeed it is. Mm-hmm. But I think, and people too, they took this these two paragraphs here, and they're like, oh, and they even did it here when he's saying, like, we need to, and they're like, Matt is slam dunks on Trump, blah, blah, blah. And like, you're doing exactly what he's right. saying not to do, you right. stupid fuck. But then again, right. a lady who writes.
And I think I made a point in the group chat where we talked about this a little bit, where you had these people who have, for their entire careers, their long distinguished careers, have been very prudent in the way that they speak, and they have been very precise in the way that they speak. And they expected them to get to this global stage, this stage in front of the country, and whether it be Mueller from the investigation or whether it was Mattis from his op-ed in his book, where they expected almost like them to be like, okay, well, I'm going to throw out everything that I've ever done in my career, and now is the kind of time I'm going to come and dunk on Trump. They didn't do that. They spoke what they said. If you can't read between the lines,
right.
get better glasses, I guess.
I think he's also, I think, saying some things pretty explicitly, although he's yeah. using a lot of big words that probably are going over a lot of people's heads, sorry to say.
Marty Mush, what up?
He's definitely saying things pretty straightforward. He's like, we're divided, and that's not going to get us anywhere. And I love the line that he says, our democracy is an experiment and that one can be reversed. I think that meaning has twofold. Just because we have a democracy doesn't mean it can't crumble. But also, because it's an experiment, you can continue to change and to adapt. And just because politics have been one way for so long and everyone digs their heels in and supports one side or the other, it doesn't have to be like that forever. You yeah. can continue to evolve and continue to change with the times. And I think that's what I read in that statement.
Yeah.
Change your scientific method to make everything come out in the outcome that you want and make it better.
One more thing. This was like a little teaser for his book that's coming out. So it was a little bit motivated by that, too. But he talks a little bit about, in the one paragraph, he says how, you know, I'm enjoying my life now after 40 years of service. I'm back home with family that I've neglected out west. And I think it's Oregon or Washington State. I forget which one. But there's a river there that I heard he is always out fly fishing and stuff. And when I went out there last summer and I was driving around, I looked at every river. I was like, please let me see Mattis fishing. Please let me see Mattis fishing.
What would you do if you saw him? What would you do?
It's Kate and it's Kate, General Mattis, and then the Norwal from Buddy the Elf, where he comes up and he's like, hi, Mattis. Hope you find your dad.
Yeah, like I could not stop looking around and just hoping, because I heard he just like will pop into a pub or like he's yeah. in the river fishing. And so I like.
Is he much of a drinker?
I don't think so. I don't think you make it that far that successfully.
I think that whenever they did a profile of his home, the only thing that he had like on one of the tables was a bottle of whiskey and a single glass right below.
Sips of
I mean, I'm sure he's not a heavy drinker. Right. I'm sure he's like, I drink like two or three fingers of bourbon while reading some book about war from 1645.
He absolutely nobody else has ever even heard of. He absolutely wears cardigans with leather elbow patches now.
Oh,
for
yeah.
sure he does.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I do that
last
too.
Last note about it, I think it's interesting that the people who have previewed his book, which I wish I was one of them, people who have previewed his book said that he doesn't even mention his time as Secretary of State or Secretary of Defense.
Well, that's
he
interesting.
He just goes about his military career, doesn't even address it really. So that's we're trying to get him on the show because he's going to be doing book rounds. That is like a golden goose.
Oh, yeah.
Big time. All right. Good round. Let's move on to round three. All right, so this next round.
Oh my God, what is that? What's that sound?
In a world, imagine a film about a veteran with a passion for motocross. Strong performances. And a message so inspiring you will want to get back on your bike in the second credits roll. The dream will now become reality on the big screen in the new film, Bennett's War. Bennett's War is a film about a heroic Army veteran overcoming injury, putting himself at great personal risk, and recovering his love for riding motocross all across in order to save his dad's farm. Marshall Bennett's father, played by the venerable and smooth Trace Atkins, that conquered tongue, but conquered dong. Delivers such a touching performance that you feel inclined to cry your eyes out. Bennett and his family's determination can be deterred by no one, but will inspire all those who pursue their greatest ambitions. Early audiences consisting of riders and military supporters alike have been laughing and smiling while on the edge of their seats an entirety of the 90-minute film. So if you think you can handle the gripping near misses and the grin stretching laughs, then catch it in theaters on August 30th. It's Bennett's War. Round number three. Cons, walk us through what's happening with the color guard.
Because it's lit, fam.
Oh, this one surprisingly kind of triggers me a little bit. But a Marine serving in one of the service's highest profile positions was admonished after hazing claims emerged when he took a lighter to a subordinate's collar to burn threads from their uniforms while the Marines were wearing them.
Irish pennants, like IPs, the little things that dangle off?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. People say Irish pennant is a fucking offensive term. That is pussy culture.
I don't even know what that. I mean, we used to call Irish pennants, but I don't even know what it means.
I never even heard that.
Yeah, I think it's because, like, Irish people, when they first came over, their clothes were ratty.
Oh, that makes sense. Now I'm upset.
And a pennant's like a flag, kind of. Like, oh, I get it. Okay. Now I'm upset.
We're still using it.
Now I'm really
triggered. Oh, now we're real mad.
Very funny.
Anyway, Sergeant Francis Frazier, the 38th Color Sergeant of the Marine Corps, was the subject of an investigation after complaints were filed last year that he had, quote, maliciously burned two junior Marines, according to a 20-page report from military
pages.
20 pages.
About burning threads.
Get out of here.
Frazier, who serves as the Marine Corps' senior sergeant, Jesus, representing the service at high-profile events across the country, was ultimately cleared of any hazing allegations after investigations found he hadn't intended to harm his Marines. No shit.
Right.
But his uniform inspection tactic was found to have been done in poor judgment, a, quote, leadership failure. And I'm just going to stop there because I can't stomach any more of this because this is absolutely
ridiculous.
Right,
so he took lighters to his Marines' collars during inspections to get rid of loose threads on their uniforms. I feel like we all did
that
for each other.
That's something that's always done.
There's
got to
be more. Maybe the way he was doing
Well, my
it.
Guess is because...
I mean, what kind of lighter did he have? Did he have like a fucking Bunsen burner?
Yeah.
Right. what?
No, my thing is probably they said because they were in uniform while he was doing it. And
but that's how you do it.
Exactly, but they probably viewed that as dangerous. I don't know. I guess
the only
thing...
I think that is setting up people for... You can't move a goalpost that far. That's right. Exactly how you're taught to do it. I mean, you don't bring out the little scissors that are there. Like, the cuticle scissors was the other thing that they would teach you to use. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you how many times I took a lighter to one of my Marines.
Well,
constantly.
Another Marine saw him doing it and said it was a crazy thing to do. So he told Frazier to stop, and then he saw Frazier doing it again. And I guess that's when the Marine asked what his first sergeant would think of the situation, Sergeant Frazier responded that, my first sergeant would have my back because this isn't that crazy of a thing to do. At that point, he accidentally burned the Marine's neck slightly. So I guess these two were having this argument while he was burning an IP off a Marine and while they were talking.
A little Bic lighter, if you move it too close, you just pull away and it's not going to be a big deal. You didn't get third degree burns here.
Right. Grow up.
Yeah.
Pussies. I mean, my God, dude. Like, I just think that this one is so ridiculous. The only way I can see that it might be a little dangerous if you're doing color guard stuff because they use a lot more starch than normal. Like maybe
possibly.
It's
right.
Super starchy and they thought that you're going to like go up in flames. But even then, just burn, dude. Just take it. Take a third degree burn.
Yeah.
That's discipline.
Yeah. I think and more than likely Sergeant Frazier probably, Jesus, he probably said to them before, he's like, you know, anytime you're going to touch or approach another junior person, you ask them permission first. Say, may I do this?
What?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, not my Marine Corps buddy.
All right, sorry. In the Army, so like,
actually were like for corporal's course, sergeant's course. You're like, can I touch your uniform?
Yeah,
that was one of the things that you're supposed to say. Yeah.
You're not supposed to just go up and like touch people, or you know, like.
I was
fire.
Always touching everybody.
Okay, creepy.
Oh, I'm a little sausage fingers.
But I mean, I do respect the people. Like, can I touch you to correct your uniform? No, fuck you. I'm doing it anyway.
Right.
So this is
imagine saying no. Like, no, you can't fix my uniform. Fuck out of town.
No, I want my uniform to look like crap. Go away.
Well, that's weird. Well, he was found not guilty or whatever. But a 20-page report on this is kind of a crazy thing. So.
You know who I feel bad for? Whoever had to type up that 20-page report.
Yeah. I feel bad for the poor Marine who was standing there getting his thing burned while the two were arguing. He's like, okay. But
how short
and I
want to
see pictures
be?
Of how bad he was born. There's no way, or she, how bad they were right. born. There's no way that it was that bad by just a little Bic lighter.
Right,
I hate
exactly.
that. That's ridiculous, man.
Reports stink. I think it ended up being, I had to do an investigation into a soldier's death. I had to write, like, it was like 50 or 60 pages.
Jesus.
That was just a we'll reason for me to talk about.
Okay.
Thanks for calling, Connor. We'll get back to you now.
We're going through a tunnel.
All right, let's move on through a tunnel all the way to round number four. And here's the interview with Stephen Machuga of StackUp.org.
For round number four.
Captain Cons, before we start with our next guest, I got to ask you, do you know what a stack is? In the military.
Well, sure. I mean, I was an artillery officer, but I did do a little infantry work, and you want to stack up on a building before you clear it. But I am not, as I said, I was an artillery guy, not an infantry guy, so I might default to what an infantryman has by the book definition.
Well, lucky for you, we have former Army Ranger. Shit!
Keep going!
Can I say? Well, lucky for you, we have former Army Ranger Stephen Machuga and founder of Stack Up with us today. Stephen, can you explain? We get the basic gist of a stack up, but what that means, what your background is, and how that has translated into your organization, Stack Up.
Afternoon, everybody. How's everybody doing? Yeah. So the formation of the stack, it's literally getting ready to clear a room in front of you. And just because you're an artillery officer, Cons, does not mean I'm surprised that you hadn't done any clearing of rooms.
I did a little bit in Iraq. I did clear some rooms and some buildings in Iraq, but we wanted to defer to you as the infantryman.
Yes.
Oh, sure. No problem. I mean, usually 4 to 5 guys on a door. You got your front guy getting ready to with a battering ram. You got your second guy in there with a canister, a non-lethal explosive of some kind or another to go ahead and surprise everybody on the other side there. And then everybody goes running in. They pie out into the corners and clear the room in essence. But go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, so why stack up for the name of your organization?
The original concept was it was a bunch of people coming together to do something good as essence, like doing more than you could by yourself. So that was the original idea behind the naming convention. But bottom line is Stack Up, we're a military charity. We support veterans, both active duty, U.S. and NATO allies, with gaming and geek culture. I started doing charity back in 2010, sending Xboxes to guys overseas. And it's now we're working with the Center for Disease Control to help fight veteran suicide. So we've come a long way all these years.
Really cool. And I had read an article about you in VentureBeat that says when you were an Army Ranger captain in Iraq, there was close calls, there was feelings of panic. And one of the things that really helped you kind of escape and get out of that situation in the downtime, you ordered Alienware, a gaming laptop, and you started playing The Elder Scrolls. You started getting into World of Warcraft and certain things like that in the downtime. How did that help you?
My birthday, June 9th, had a close mortar strike over on the shower tent when I was up in Mosul. And then 2 days later, we had a close call with a suicide bombing on Route Tampa around Baghdad. And it was very much like, okay, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and I'm just going to take all my money and we're just going to push it in the center table. I'm going to buy this $5,000 laptop, have it sent over there to my hooch, and I'm just going to play video games. And I did. It was absolutely fantastic. I'm a gamer at heart. I've always played video games, and gaming has always been the thing to kind of center me, focus me. And anybody who's been deployed forward knows, you know, you get inside the wire, you know, you put up your kit, you clean everything, you know, debriefs, and then you've got another 12 hours to kind of sit around mm-hmm. and not do anything. And you do that for 364 and a wake up, and it's just mind numbing, and you need something to chew through those hours. And gaming was how I got through it. So, and go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, so you're talking about relaxing through gaming. And I think the overwhelming narrative for those that are not informed about gaming in general is that it's violent. And they would say, how could that possibly help you relax? How could that possibly help people deal with depression and PTSD? So what do you say to those detractors?
Oh, we get that all the time. You know, Call of Duty, Battlefield, you know, any number of games, you know, it's all about military age males and females shooting each other in the face with assault rifles for fun. And it's one of those, the guys who are on the ground doing that kind of stuff, the way I figure it, first off, they're very well produced games. They're all very well, like they're hundreds of millions of dollar marketing ads and things like that. So they're the games that people think of when they think of video games. And they're also a lot of fun to play. So your average 19-year-old, that's what they want to play with their friends. It's not so much the content. This is the games that are out there. And it's not always about shooting games. You know, our third most asked for game has always been Madden. Mm-hmm. You get a lot of the sports titles. And then, I don't know if either of the two of you are gamers at all, but you know how the games have gone over the years. I mean, you've got all kinds of games out there. It's not just about shooting people. You know, gosh, there's so much out there to do.
Now,
I mean, we were talking World of Warcraft.
Yeah. Perfect example. And I mean, I'm dating myself, but my first console was Nintendo. So to see what Nintendo was all the way to what they are now is quite
absolutely
the leap. So to your point about how fun and interactive they are is really, it's more about the community, right?
Absolutely. And that's where it comes down to. Yeah, it's a lot of fun, but it gives a lot of guys are in. I mean, again, y'all were military. A lot of guys are in such a hurry to get out of the military. They run headlong out the door, just middle finger in the air, and don't think about like everything that the military provides them as far as a community of guys and gals that they, you know, they're friends, and they go back home and they go to middle America and they go get a job as a mechanic or they do whatever. And they're isolated by themselves in the civilian world, and they don't have that connectivity that gaming can act as a bridge to connect them.
Right. Because
so it works
now. You know, it's such a social thing. Everybody's connected online, and it's more than just playing the game. I used to live with our producer, Bren, who was a gamer, and I could hear him talking to his friends. He would play with his friends, and it wasn't just the game. I could hear them, like, also talking about other stuff, too, trying to get girlfriends, not being able to, all that tough stuff. But it really is a social thing. So when did this become, first this started as something you did for yourself, when did it become something that you said, bigger picture, I want to take this beyond myself and bring other veterans into it?
Well, I was just doing it on the weekends for funsies. It was this weird cyclical thing where my driver in Iraq got out and then immediately went back in because he hated civilian sector. And then immediately got shipped to Afghanistan. So when he knew I had some contacts in the games industry and said, hey, we're bored out of our minds over here. Can we get an Xbox or something? And I sent out some emails thinking, all right, well, we'll see where this goes. And the response back was overwhelming from the games industry. So I got pallets of gear. So I sent them a bunch of stuff, and they sent back pictures of them playing DJ Hero and Guitar Hero. And it was really great. It was really heartwarming. And so I sent that back. But, Joe Snuffy, once he finds out that you're sending thousands of dollars of video games, suddenly everybody. Yeah. So I started getting some real like, hey, can you do that for us too? And I realized like, oh, this could be a thing.
Right.
So I started doing it more and more. And then ironically, I was in DC as a government contractor back in the day. And there was I was between contracts during the sequestering in 2012. When it was kind of like an Order 66 out of Star Wars where it's like, oh yeah, no more contractors. We're not doing any more contracts. It's going to be government employees only. So I was out of a job and I didn't have anything to do. And so I started taking the charity more seriously. Like I was like, all right, well, let's see if we can turn this into my job. And boy, it worked. It worked beautifully. So yeah. And here
awesome.
We are.
In addition to sending gaming consoles, games to folks overseas, what else does Stack Up see as their mission?
Sure. So we have four main pillars of our organization. We have our supply crates, which is where we box up games and gear, send them all over the world, combat zones, peacekeeping operations, military hospitals, veteran service organizations back home, guys struggling back home. We have our aerosol program, which is where we fly disabled or deserving veterans to various gaming and geek culture events. Like, we just finished Comic-Con. We're doing PAX West tomorrow. We're flying a bunch of people up to Seattle.
Awesome.
It was the first time I ever went to Penny Arcade Expo in Seattle and saw 50,000 video game fans all in the same place, all speaking my language. Mm-hmm. Like, that was back in 2009. It was a life-changing moment. Like, I had gotten out of the service, didn't know what I really wanted to do with my life. And it was very much like, oh, this is an industry. This is a thing. And seeing all those people that all spoke my language really helped dramatically change who I am today.
Are you saying geek culture? I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt. Are you saying geek culture? So that's not a derogatory term?
Geek. No.
No, okay. I call myself a nerd all the time, man. Okay. You got it. It's said with love.
That's the thing. Once upon a time, it used to be a term of, you know, a derogatory term. And now that geeks and nerds have kind of taken over the planet, mm-hmm. where, you know, Jeff Bezos and freaking Elon Musk and, you know, those guys, you know, it's like, it's a thing now. Now everybody's a nerd.
Nobody's hanging like, this Army Ranger by his boxers on the flagpole. You know, he's going to be just fine. But I also love that I think people tend to paint the military with the same brush. It's like a group of hardos and tough guys. When in reality, geek culture is huge within the military. We just did a thing the last 2 weeks where I dove into the furry culture in the military. That's like a whole other thing.
Oh, buddy.
Don't get me started. It's like a whole thing. But I'm getting my own fursuit designed, by the way. Humble brag. Right. But it's a huge – there's so much geek culture. And I can see like Comic-Con and all that stuff. Like mm-hmm. people who – I know guys in the barracks who like that was their bread and butter. And mm-hmm. gaming was such a huge thing across the board. So I think that's really smart. Do you have any particular success story where you saw somebody struggling and you can attest to the fact that the gaming community like really genuinely helped them?
At this point, we've been doing this so long, there's too many to count. Right. I remember the one we sent a supply crate to a guy and his family because he was struggling, and it ended up helping his son out more than it did him. The younger son had Tourette's, mm-hmm. and he was on some pretty heavy medication to work with him on his Tourette's. But he found that when he sat him down in front of Minecraft and they were playing Minecraft together as a way of connecting, he didn't need to put him on as much medication. And it was just like, it's weird things like that. And we get, you know, we've gotten so many thank yous and, oh, this has changed how we've done things. And this has changed our deployment. This is the best thing ever. You know, guys who will come back from deployment and be like, this was the most memorable thing about our deployment. Cause we would then have Madden tournaments where mm-hmm. whoever would win would get a day off. And there's so many amazing stories about guys and gals. Like, I can't even think of all of them, but That's the great thing. But with one of our newest programs, as we were talking about working with the Center for Disease Control, our Overwatch program, which is our suicide awareness and prevention team that's online now, that has taken the conversation way more seriously. And now we're helping veterans who are struggling just with their, you know, we're getting some real, real good news stories back from guys who are saying like, hey, if you guys had not been here, I don't know what I would have done. We've had, you know, weapons taken out of people's houses. You know, it's just really good news stories coming out of some of these programs. So That's awesome. Exciting. Yeah.
And what's next for you guys? And where can people find you? How can people donate? What's the best way to track what you're up to?
Just head on over to stackup.org, and that's where we're at. We have a contact form if you're looking to help out or know somebody who's deployed forward that could use some help or struggling back home. Gaming is a great way to connect with a lot of these guys and gals. And, that's the best way to do it. And
nice.
We can always – yep.
Nice. And if people want to find you and play against you, what's the game they can usually find you lurking in? What's the name?
I jump around all the time, but I've been playing Final Fantasy 14. It's an online. It's like World of Warcraft, but like Japan. I'm all over the place, though. But you can find me. I'm on at Shanghai 6 on Twitter. Link up with me there if you want to play some games or you want to have more questions personally. All the social media for Stack Up is at stackup.org, all spelled out. And that's – there you go.
All right. I just want to end with a quick lightning round of a few questions. You ready?
Oh, here we go.
Top 3 best video games of all time.
World of Warcraft. I'm going to go League of Legends and Call of Duty.
Okay. Your personal favorite video game of all time?
I'm a big fan of Dead by Daylight.
Okay. Best gaming console of all time?
I'm an Xbox, so we'll go Xbox.
Okay. Best movie adaptation of a video game? Street Fighter, Mortal Kombat, or Tomb Raider?
Mortal Kombat. Mortal Kombat.
All right. If you could be shrunken down and put into any video game, which video game are you getting put into?
Yeah, that's a pass.
I would be the butler in Tomb Raider that just follows everybody around in that one.
All right, and last one. Is Super Mario the George Washington of video games?
First off, you said Super Mario, so obviously...
Oh, okay, that's an East Coast thing.
Mario.
That's an East Coast thing.
This is Mario guy.
Super Mario, sorry. It's me, Mario.
There you go. All right, he knows it. All right.
I know it. Come on.
Yeah, I guess that's a very good... The George Washington... Yeah, he's... Yeah, I guess you can't really use the paddles from Pong.
Right.
That doesn't really work. So, yeah, I guess that is a very good analogy. I like that.
There you go.
All right. Well, stackup.org. Check them out. Visit them on Twitter, whatever. And thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it. Any final notes? Anything else you want to put out there into the universe?
Hey, you guys are doing great work over here. Certainly appreciate it. Kate, Cons, thanks for having me on today. This has been great.
Yeah,
I love you guys. Something great. Seriously, I love your stuff. It's just I follow you guys every day on Twitter, and it's just always worth a giggle.
Oh, thank
you.
Let's all shrink down and meet at the Tomb Raider house. We'll meet you there. I'll bring the butler stuff, and we'll.
Thank you for all you're doing for the veteran community. Yes. It really does mean a lot to us. Thank you very much.
Very cool. Stackup.org.
Here comes the motocross bikes again. Unbelievable! Oh man. Keep on imagining about a film about a veteran with a passion for motocross. And a high-quality storyline, strong performances, and a message so inspiring that it'll get you back on your bike before the second credits roll. The dream will now become a reality on the big screen in the new Bennett's War film. Early audiences consisting of writers and military supporters alike are laughing just like you are right now, and they were on the edge of their seats for the complete 90-minute film. So make sure that you can go and get your tickets early. And if you want to go, you can go to our Instagram. We actually have it in the bio on our Twitter. We'll post it up too. Make sure you get your tickets early to go see Bennett's War.
Come on, chaps, we're out of here.
Uh-oh. All right, let's move on to round number 5. Oh my god. Here comes the motocross bikes again. Unbelievable. Oh man. Keep on imagining about a film about a veteran with a passion for motocross. And a high-quality storyline, strong performances, and a message so inspiring that it'll get you back on your bike before the second credits roll. The dream will now become a reality on the big screen in the new Bennett's War film. Early audiences consisting of writers and military supporters alike are laughing just like you are right now, and they were on their edge of their seats for the complete 90-minute film. So make sure that you can go and get your tickets early. And if you want to go, you can go to our Instagram. We actually have it in the bio on our Twitter. We'll post it up too. Make sure you get your tickets early to go see Bennett's War.
Come on, chaps, we're out of here.
All right, let's move on to round number 5.
Round number 5, got a little question-rooney for you guys.
What do you got?
Do you collect challenge coins?
I wish I did. I have a handful, and they're just sitting somewhere, and I wish I had them displayed, and I wish I kept more of them.
Okay.
I look back now. There's a lot of things in the military I wish I had done looking back on it now, because I would appreciate it now that I didn't appreciate at
the time. My biggest regret from the Army? Challenge coins, man. Should have done it right. What about you, Jabs? Do you?
No, but I am jealous of people who have really cool ones. I got a lot of cool ones over the years, and I just didn't give a fuck about them. Gave them away to different people that I didn't, because I just didn't care about them. Yeah. But whenever we went to Seth Moulton's office, and he had his table with the glass top, and it was covered.
Oh, that was
and
amazing. There, I was cool like, ones.
Damn, I wish I had that.
Yeah, pretty sweet. And for people who don't know, remember Pogs?
Yes.
Back in the day, where you would trade and exchange, and they were cool. That's kind of like military Pogs.
I had a dope-ass slammer that had like a light on the inside.
Oh, nice. Yeah. And so one of the things, if you go to a bar, and I've never really seen anybody do this, but you see who has the highest like ranking challenge coin, because even I believe the president probably even has one. I have one from Secretary of Leon Panetta. I have a challenge coin from, I think, is my highest one.
Longtime stoolie, Leon Panetta.
Brick by brick. Indeed. But yeah, so these higher ranking people oftentimes for morale purposes, if they're out and amongst the troops, they'll be like, hey, kid. It's like the guy who gives Tic Tacs in Home Alone. He's like, hold out your paw. Don't spill Tic Tacs. And they'll hand you a little challenge coin. You're like, oh, that's cool. And I get to show proof now that I met this person and how neat. So a lot of people do collect them. And then units will get their own made. We actually have a ZBT challenge coin that your friend was kind enough to send us after the NASCAR trip, which I keep on my desk. And when I was at the Barstool Classic, these state troopers down in PA gave me their challenge coin to keep in the ZBT area. So yeah, sometimes they're cool. They have meaning, whatever. But this all comes into play with a story that is causing a firestorm on Twitter right now. But it involves the Hatch Act. And first of all, what a name. Major Ginger Tate. Ginger Tate. Chaps, you have a ginger taint. This is Ginger Tate.
Nice.
Major Ginger Tate of the,
I want to cut that.
Of the U.S. Army National Guard Signal Corps took the opportunity to attend Joe Biden's outdoor town hall meeting at Limestone College in Gaffney, South Carolina. Obviously, Joe Biden running for president in the Democratic side of things. Attendance was estimated to be 400 to 500 people, and Major Tate grew emotional while she told her story to Biden. She said,
so, Vice President Joe Biden, my name is Major Ginger Tate, and in 2013, I deployed with 198 ESB out of Delaware, South Carolina, under Colonel James Smithson and Sergeant Major Powers. I was the company commander of the Bravo Company here in South Carolina, the detached. And me and my first sergeant made these coins, and it has every city that my soldiers were in Afghanistan. And I've been saving these coins for 6 years to meet you and President Obama. So that if I ever met you, I could give this to you. And when I saw on the news last night that you were coming, I just had to be here.
Couple problems there. She was in uniform while she said it. And two, even though I collect some, what kind of nerd collects challenge coins, right? She led 130 troops in Afghanistan in 2013, and Tate presented Biden with the coins that she and fellow soldiers had collected on tour in Afghanistan. Her first sergeant had coins made listing all the cities they had visited on the deployment, so a lot of meaning behind those. And again, she said she had waited 6 years to give them to former President Obama or to Biden, whichever one she got to meet. So Biden then gave her a coin from Afghanistan that he was carrying, and they hugged. Immediately, military Twitter blew their ever-loving minds, and it was from the left and the right.
I love this because a lot of people know, like, we're not, like, we don't really get too political on the show that often. Right. But when something like this comes out, they're like, oh, ZBT gonna say anything about this? And they'll tag us like we're nervous to say, yeah, this was wrong. You can't do that.
Right.
It's wrong whenever you brought the MAGA hats to, like, and you're wearing the MAGA hats in uniform. It's wrong whenever you're talking about you want Joe Biden to be the president whenever you're in uniform. You can't do it. It's simple as that.
Would she have been okay had she not said that last line, I hope and pray that you will be our next president? She would have been okay. How did she just left it at, it was an honor to serve under you? Because, as you know, the president and vice president, you know, the commander in chief, and then obviously the vice president advises him. That's a normal statement that you can say about any president, regardless. Well,
you know, actually, I don't think it would because she was at a political rally, so like there have been inherently political things about it.
Right,
but this goes to a wider issue, I think, in the military. Condon, you're going to have to go to bat here. Can you just tell your people to change their fucking clothes? Like, just change right. your clothes.
Right. Yeah. In the Marines, if she's not,
she makes that same statement and she gives it, like, I was in Afghanistan. I led this many people. She hands them it and she's wearing a fucking Saturdays Are for the Boys shirt.
And we're all good here.
Nobody cares. It's fine. It's a non-story. Wearing your uniform.
Just change
out of town.
Your fucking clothes, man. Right. You don't have to go to the movies in uniform. Just bring some gym shorts with you and change your clothes.
Well, I think wearing the uniform was a very calculated move here. It wasn't like she got off work and went over. I think she
knew. Oh, no. It's definitely on purpose. Right. Yeah, she's a major. Did. She knows. She knew exactly what she was doing.
And this people are saying this violates the Hatch Act. What? I'm not going to lie. I was like, what's the Hatch Act? I did not know.
It's pretty wide-based, and it's just basically saying that if you're in the DOD, if you're a military employee, a government employee, you can't be involved in political arena, which is one of the reasons why people got upset when President Trump used the July 4th footage like as his official campaign. Like they said, that's a violation of the Hatch Act. Like, well, you can't do anything political with the military.
I also asked you guys last night this question because I was seeing a lot of this on Twitter too. Well, what about those guys that wore the Trump patches on their uniforms when Trump came to visit? So is that the same thing?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's no good all around.
They but probably, also, I don't like, remember. I think it's the same thing, but I don't understand why other branches of service let you wear whatever fucking morale patch you want to wear.
That's actually kind of interesting, too. I never saw that when I was in. So I think some of our more elite units will do that. They will wear something that
pilots
signifies.
Big time do it.
Yeah, pilots. But also, I think pilots, we'd have to have a pilot confirm this. I think they have certain patches that are specific to their unit that are nicknames of the unit. So it's still within their unit as opposed to just like a morale patch.
Because it's always been weird to me, like whenever I'll get somebody that'll reach out and be like, hey, we love the ZBT logo. We love listening to the podcast. We want to make it into a patch and wear it on your uniform. And in my head, like as somebody who hosts the podcast and wants it to be loved and adored, like I think, sure. But the military side of me, I'm like, you can fucking do that?
Yeah. Yeah. But if you do want to wear a ZBT patch, I support that.
And yeah, we definitely.
Because you're not in my command.
I did Google it. So, the Hatch Act has been around since 1939 to prevent pernicious political activities by federal workers.
Pernicious canids.
Pernicious canids. No, but it was modified by Clinton in 1993. So, if you're a federal worker, you can participate in partisan political activities during off-duty hours.
Right, so she just taken her uniform off. Right. This was probably off-duty.
So that would have been fine, but you can't be going around. But part of the Hatch Act is that you can't use your military status and like symbol to promote a certain political agenda.
Which is the reason why Tulsi Gabbard it wasn't allowed to like talk about shit on this show. It's the reason why whenever Seth Moulton and Tulsi were, both of them used pictures of them in uniform during their presidential campaigns. Like, you're not speaking on behalf of the DOD. Please don't do that.
Right. Yeah. So but Twitter is just,
Twitter's
a
buzz.
Really...
Again, it goes back to what we were saying with Mattis. People just want to dunk and say, oh, this person's wrong.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, we get it. Whatever.
Unless you're putting up a dank meme.
This one was wrong. She was in the wrong.
She was. It's black and white. It's black and white. By the way, pernicious. Great word.
Such a good word.
Yes.
Pernicious canids, more like it. Right? Am I right, gang?
You're definitely right. All right, let's move into save rounds and alibis. Cons, do you have any?
It's the most wonderful time of the
year. God. He's got on the back of his laptop, I'm sure you can see it, a big Army football beat Rice.
Let's go, baby! College football, you're listening to this. I'm probably already in the parking lot three beers deep. Let's go!
You know what Army guys do in their barracks rooms over at West Point?
What?
They beat their rice. Well, that's too much. It's a little small penis joke. You guys beating your rice in there? Too much. That's too funny.
Honest to God, I might just get rid of the save rounds alibis portion of the show.
Why? It's my favorite part.
That was
where I really shine.
I'm sure you guys have very healthy sized genitalia.
What?
Anyway.
What do you got, Kate?
Are you going to the game?
Oh, of course. I will be there.
Up at West
Very
Point.
Early. Up
when
at West
am I
Point.
Getting invited?
You, dude, come this weekend.
Well,
I don't
want to go. Oh.
Just look at the schedule.
It's a smoke-free campus.
No. You just look at the schedule, pick a game. We can get tickets to any and all games. All
right.
So that's whatever you want to do.
I want to take a boat.
Okay, you can do that.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Cool.
Kate, that's you have any safe rounds to alibis?
Nope, that's it. Going into Labor Day weekend, I feel like I have to tell everybody, please remain inside a 350-mile radius. Check your car tires. Make sure you got enough fuel that at least two people know where you're going. And don't you fucking forget to shave still. Don't think you're back on the block.
Thank you, Kate.
You're welcome.
That's excellent advice.
Thanks.
Excellent advice. I am going, I'm excited about the long weekend too. I will be going to a little staycation at the JW Marriott. So if you're listening and you work at the JW Marriott here and you want to get me around on the old golf course, your boy would not turn that down.
Yeah.
I think I'm so spoiled down here with prices. I don't know if I could. I don't think I could afford to play golf where you guys live.
It's expensive.
Pretty
man.
Pricey.
It's yeah. expensive.
Yeah. What do you pay average round of golf?
Anywhere from 70 to 110.
Okay.
And then if I'm, right. well, but then also too, sometimes if you get invited to a club, it's, you know, a lot of times you just pay the guest
the
fee
guest
to
fee.
The, who's ever hosting you. And that can be a little pricier depending on the club.
Don't ask me yeah, how much I pay because I guess I'm a woman, so.
Well, mainly because I know you and know you don't pay golf.
I don't golf. That was I don't golf. That was a trap.
Reason. The place, the TPC down here, $150 a round.
Wow.
Fucking ridiculous.
Oof. That's yeah. expensive. Oh, you know, Trump Ferry Point, gorgeous course up in the Bronx, I believe. I yeah. think that's over $200 to play.
Oy.
It's like $225 if I'm saying
nice
that
course, though.
Put
oh, it's gorgeous.
So much pressure on it, I feel like. If you, like, pay that much and then you suck. Or you don't get
right.
hammered.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
What a waste.
Yeah.
No doubt. Bren, you got anything?
Yeah, something that we skipped over on Tuesday. Cons, do you want to address the rumors that you steal clothes out of All Business Pete's closet?
Oh.
What?
Oh.
There are rumors floating around that you and Pete wore the same exact outfit.
Oh, yes, yes,
years
yes.
Apart.
So at the wedding that I was at last weekend, I wore a seersucker suit, which is very common. For summertime, especially at weddings, formal functions. Seersucker used to be, little lesson here, used to be a working man's material. And then back
perfect
in the 1920s, Princeton undergrads took it over and became more of a thing for preppy individuals to wear. But anyway,
douches.
Mrs. All Business Pete tweeted a picture from her and All Business Pete's wedding where he was wearing a seersucker suit. And it just so happened that we were both wearing yellow ties.
They were like
great
the same
look.
Suit.
It
so
was,
yeah, that
it was the
good.
Same exact suit.
It was literally
well, yeah,
the same exact suit.
Seersucker, there's not really any variation to it.
Also, they I don't know what your same. Polo is, but it looks like the Russian sickle
it's,
and...
It's no free ads, but
definitely
it's a,
something that would come out of All Business
it's a local,
Pete's closet.
Right, it's a
Russian.
Local brand down in Austin that I really enjoy.
Oh, man.
That actually might be working with Barstool in the future. I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't have said that. Who knows? We'll see.
Is it Putin polos?
No,
that's
it's
what
not.
It looks like.
It's not.
Wow.
I need to get the hell out of here.
Sound the retreat.